You are listening to Gangland Wire, hosted by former Kansas City Police Intelligence Unit Detective Gary Jenkins.
Well, good evening, all you wiretappers out there. Tonight, we're going to talk about a bribery attempt of a Chicago police officer. I recently had somebody, one of our fans, one of the wiretappers out there, ask me if I'd ever been offered a serious bribe, and I have to say it, Kansas City, we didn't really have that tradition of bribery by the time I came on in 1971. Now, in the 1950s, they did, up into the 60s. And when we got Clarence Kelly, who was a former FBI agent, as our chief of police, he really rooted out a lot of the commanders and sidelined them, and they retired when they realized that there was a new sheriff in town, shall we say. So that kind of that smaller time bribery did not exist. And the bigger time bribery, I don't know. Kelly is the one that formed the intelligence unit where I worked at most of the time. And so he started off with two incorruptible guys, Ray Kinney and Jimmy Doolin. And like a lot of us, they were country guys. They were from, one was from Stockton, and the other one, now Jimmy Doolin, actually was from up by where I come from in northwest Missouri, from a rural area. And it was kind of like, I don't know, we didn't really have that tradition. We didn't grow up with that tradition of people being able to bribe policemen. So we didn't take bribes. Now, there were some people that did, and we had our share of criminals or policemen who were criminals all along, and they'd get caught every once in a while. But mainly we didn't have it. Now, Chicago, New York is a little different story. There's kind of like a long tradition. It's institutional corruption that, in a lot of little ways, they always took clean, shall we say, clean money as opposed to dirty money. Never take money from narcotics dealers or somebody like mob guys. If they got outside the realm of what they were supposed to do, like Hanhart in Chicago, William Hanhart was a longtime police officer, sergeant, captain, went all the way up to commander, ran a burglary ring, and was really connected closely with the outfit. But when a suburban policeman was killed by a couple of mob-associated armed robbers, two guys that worked with Harry Ailman and his crew, why, he made them turn them in, and they had to tell where the body, they'd buried this policeman's body, and they had to tell where the body was buried. So it kind of like worked both ways, guys who were a little too close with the outfit. Who knows? Some people, it's like Las Vegas. Some people say they liked it when the mob ran it and it was safer and nicer and there's more customer service. I don't know. Everything is what it is, and that's the way it was in Kansas City, in my experience. But in Chicago, it's a little different experience. So I want to talk about when Joey Iupa was coming up and how he got caught up in a bribery attempt by one honest policeman who worked for Sheriff Richard Ogilvie. Ogilvie was a sheriff that took over. He actually hired Richard Kane and had to end up firing him shortly after. But Ogilvie was a Cook County sheriff for a period of time back in the 60s, 50s and 60s, I believe. And he was basically, he was not corrupt. Other than, you know, you got to be a politician, you got to do certain things to get along. But he did not allow his guys to take the smaller time briberies. Who knows? I mean, you got to run for office again, and they take money for their campaign contributions. I mean, that still goes on up to today, and which allows you access. But I'm going to tell you one story that I thought was kind of interesting about this one honest policeman. He was I believe he was a vice unit officer. He might have been a sergeant, doesn't really say. This man was Donald Shaw. He was 26-year-old vice officer assigned to the Cook County Vice Squad, 1965. He and James Larkin, James Hill, and James Bredican, I guess that was the Triple Jimmy gang, their Triple Jimmy crew, the Three Jims or Three Jameses, probably what they were called at the office. They went into Doyle's Palm Club, which was 6026 West 26th Street. Posing as customers, the coppers heard sounds of slot machines being played in the back. They ended up arresting a 63-year-old woman for gambling, an Edward F. Doyle from Cicero, as the manager. And shortly after the arrest, while they were still there, a man named John Carr walked in. He allegedly at the time tried to offer Shaw a $500 bribe to forget the arrest. Shaw just turns around and arrests John Carr for his attempted bribery. And later they had a county grand jury heard the case and indicted that man for bribery. This John Carr would be identified by the sheriff's department as a brother-in-law of Joseph Korngold, who was a well-known outfit gambling fixture in Cicero. His real name was not Carr. It was Casper J. Clapetta. Now, we had a guy here in Kansas City, some of the other members of the family's name was Camasano, and he was pretty well known, Willie Camasano, called him Willie the Rat, and we used to call his son, he's Willie Camasano Jr., he used to call him Willie the Mouse, but they used the name Cummings, and he used it in a lot of different business things, and actually, if you think about it, a lot of prejudice against Italians out of the turn of the century and on up into the 40s and 50s, so I understand why they might want to anglicize their name a little bit from the Italian. That, and when you were a well-known mobster, you also don't mind changing your name either. He was an associate of Chucky English, who was a West Side mob gambling boss, and Lester Cruz, who was an operator of a floating crap game for the outfit. Officer Shaw later on was approached, got a phone call from a Jacob P. Dutch. They called him Dutch Bergreiter, which I guess they called him Dutch. That's from the Deutsch, or German. He was a lieutenant on the sheriff's department, and he called up Don Shaw and said, hey, you know, let's talk about this. I want you to meet somebody. So they got together with other members of the unit and somehow got a miniature radio transmitter with a receiver from the state police. These weren't very common. In 1965, let me tell you, these kinds of devices were not common at all. But anyhow, they got the device, they wired him up. This was a Cook County Sheriff's Office, remember? And they went to Chicago Police Intelligence Unit, Captain Duffy and Lieutenant Barry, who assigned a couple of detectives, Alan Jacobson and Robert Headley, to operate this recording device. We used to call them a KEL kit. Back that time, a KEL, I think, was the brand name of them. And it looked like a pager. It was a pretty good size sending unit that they would have to tape on them. You had to be real careful not to tape it directly to their skin because it got hot. You needed some cloth between the person's skin. Many an informant had to run to the bathroom and strip that thing off because somebody taped that KEL directly to their skin and then put enough clothes over it that it and they were like maybe like bending over it. It was pushing against them real hard that they had to run and take it off. They could even get burn some of their skin. It would get so bad. So at the prearranged time, Don Shaw walked into a real estate office. Bergbreiter also had a off-duty gig as a real estate salesman. He had his own company. He will, when he gets fired in the end, he will go into the real estate business. This real estate office was on Northwest Highway in Palatine. Bergbreiter introduces Don Shaw to a man he calls Joey O'Brien. And those three men walk about a half a block away to a sandwich shop and drive in on Illinois Route 53 and Northwest Highway. Some of you guys that live up there in those north suburbs probably know where this is. It was in that sandwich shop, Iupa then made his offer. He'd offer $2,000 to Don Shaw to water down what he called water down your court testimony on the car bribery case. They didn't care so much about the other gambling, but what they did care about was this bribery case. After the meeting, Shaw went on home and Bergbreiter came to his house about 10 or 15 minutes later, called him out and had him sit in his car. And Bergbreiter went ahead and gave Shaw, he hadn't really given his okay particularly, but acted like he might be interested, and he gave him $500 at a down payment on the $2,000 bribe. In an article that Mike Byrne had put up on his website, Chicago Outfit, old and new articles, I downloaded this and copied it off. I want to read to you the exact conversation that these men had that day in that sandwich shop. Bergbrider said, "Don, I need a little help with the case." Officer Shaw, "Yeah, Dutch, what's up?" "Well, you know that bribery bust you made on that guy over in Cicero a few months ago?" "Yeah." "Well, now some friends of mine are very concerned. Shaw is a good guy, and we should help him out." "Yeah, how's that?" "Now take it easy, take it easy. I'm not asking you to do anything wrong or to perjure yourself. Just help him out a little bit. Help his lawyer find a loophole. These fucking shysters, they do this shit all the time. You know that." Shaw says, "Well, what's in it for me?" You know the tape's rolling, and then this is what's going to hook in Bergbrider. "Well, my friend would be very nice to you. I promise you that." "Yeah, well, I don't know. How's this supposed to work? I don't want no trouble out of this." "My friend's sitting in the back room right now if you want to go talk to him." "Yeah, talking can't hurt, I guess." Get up and walk in the other room, walk in the back room. "Don, this is our friend Joey O'Brien. Joey, this is Officer Don Shaw. Nice to meet you, Officer Shaw." "Likewise, just call me Don." "Joey, I think Don understands what we need here. He just needs some more details." Joey O'Brien, or Joey Iupa, says, "Don, I can always use a good man, a little extra help." Officer Shaw says, "Joey, is that your real name, or is it Iupa, or is it O'Brien?" Long, long, quiet. Then he just comes back as if he didn't say anything. "You just got to give our lawyer some kind of a loophole in the prosecution." "How can I do that?" "Well, start off, tell me what went down that night." Officer Shaw said, "Well, my whole squad was inside the joint and saw the slot machines and the crap game going on. We announced ourselves and made all the players lined up against the bar, just like normal. While we were getting IDs from everybody, your man Carr came out of the office and he got in my face. He tried to pull me away from the others and was making strong gestures with his hands. He's trying to hand me money, so I just popped him for bribery. Pretty simple, open and shut case, if you ask me." O'Brien retorts, "Well, maybe when he handed you the money, you may have had some time to ask him, well, I don't know, what's this money in your hand? Is this evidence of the gambling? Was he trying to give me evidence of these people that were gambling? Did anybody overhear exactly the conversation you guys had?" "I don't know. That might make me look bad." And O'Brien says, "Well, you know, how about if you didn't really hear what he said because he talked so soft and you just grabbed the money thinking it was evidence of gambling?" Shaw says, "Yeah, that sounds better to me." So they go ahead and leave, and that's when he meets up with Bergbrider and gives him the $500. Well, they take the tape and transcribe it and go back to the office. Sheriff Ogilvy takes over, and they get warrants and grand jury indictments against Bergbrider and Iupa for this attempted bribery. Sheriff Ogilvy will then start pulling in other sheriff's deputies who were friends and cohorts of Bergbrider. There was a David Myers and a Donald DeBrent who had been in the sheriff's central vice unit for quite some time, and they had already been suspended for refusing to take lie detector test. Called them in and ended up getting them fired. After the Iupa bribery attempt on Donald Shaw, they were actually had been assigned to protect Shaw. Shaw had continued to try to set up other meetings to suck Iupa in a little further, and all of a sudden he turned cold on him, and they knew that the word was probably out. And that's when they assigned these two guys to protect Shaw. These were like assigning the foxes to the chicken house. Turns out, as this is all going down, why Iupa, of course, he's got all kinds of contacts inside the police department, and he knew that they were going to get a grand jury indictment with him. So he just had his lawyer telephone Sheriff Ogilvy and said that he would surrender. The paper stated at the time, Iupa appeared in a blue silk suit, blue-gray straw hat, and sunglasses. And they put him in the back of a paddy wagon with his blue silk suit and took him to the Milwaukee Avenue station. Mugged him and printed him and held him for overnight check with other law enforcement agencies to send in his fingerprints, see if he had any other charges. That's just kind of a little, you know, we got you, buddy, and we're going to fuck with you a little bit. Eventually, he was able to get out on bond. He only had a $5,000 bond, and he paid 10% on that $500 in cash, in which it was reported he paid with two $100 bills and the rest in 20s. Bergbreiter will go ahead and resign from the force, and actually during this same time he had already had his name and address found as a contact person inside of a brothel that was up there on the north side. He'd been the chief of the vice squad for quite a while. He had told Don Shaw when he was trying to recruit him, he said, "Hey, don't worry about this, you know, I've been on their payroll for a long time. I never had any trouble and have done pretty well." I got a transcript of that tape-recorded conversation between IUPA and Dutch Bergbreiter and Donald Shaw, who was the undercover vice squad detective who had busted Mr. Carr and busted him for attempting to offer a bribe. He's introduced by Bergbreiter in a Palatine sandwich shop. Don Shaw says, "Joey, is that your real name, O'Brien or IUPA?" "IUPA," he said. "Well, where did you get the name O'Brien?" IUPA says, "Well, that's the name I used to fight under, Shaw. Do you know what you want to do?" Shaw says, "Not exactly." IUPA says, "Would you have any objection to helping John Carr off the hook in court for a consideration, and if in doing so it wouldn't hurt your position as a police officer?" Shaw says, "I wouldn't mind at all if I didn't hurt myself as a cop. And if I didn't have to perjure myself in court." IUPA says, "You won't hurt yourself and you won't have to be in court. Just give the lawyer a loophole in your prosecution." IUPA asked him for details the night of the arrest and how that went down. Then IUPA gave him a way to go. He said, "Well, excuse me, do you think there's such a crime as playing a slot machine?" Shaw said, "Well, there's a law against it." IUPA says, "Laws are flexible. They're made to bend. It's just like a big tree standing there, and it's made to flex, otherwise it breaks." IUPA continues on, "Let's put it cold. This is your hometown. These are your people. Are you going to let an out-of-town guy like O'Mara come in and wrap you around his finger? Like all these Negroes and all their demonstrations, is there any goal to you? Is that any goal to you, to me, to our friends, to our kids? It's a law. It's not right, but it's a law." He was talking about the new boss of the vice squad that Sheriff Ogilvy had put in, and I guess they probably, when he said, you know, like all these Negroes and their demonstrations, he probably had become unpopular because he'd been assigning some of the guys to go work the demonstrations. This is 1965, and when we were first getting civil rights demonstrations. Shaw replies, "Well, like I said, it's law. I get paid to do it." IUPA said, all right, I understand. Fine, we understand each other. There are several ways to do things, though. Take this man like O'Mara. He thinks he's going to whip the world. You can't just go around hurting people. Like if you find a place open at 10 minutes after 4, that'd be 4 in the morning, and he's supposed to be closed at 4 a.m., and there are 20 people in there, he's going to close them up completely. You can't do that to people and get away with it all the time. You got to use some common sense. You really do. You got to use some reasoning. When the saturation point comes, you're saturated. You're through. Our machines aren't taking money away from children, their milk money or the money they go to school with. Every month, I will see that there is a C-note or some other worldly goods in your mailbox. You'll be on the payroll." Shaw replied, "Well, what do you want from me to be on the payroll?" IUPA says, "Well, all I want from you is the information that they will not be kicking me with the point of the shoe, but mainly with the side of it. If you find out something or see something that I should know, and you think I should know it, I'll give you a telephone number. You follow me?" Shaw says, "Well, the thing of it is, I would suddenly be out of a job if I stopped making pinches. You can do it like you can do it like that, like you say, and just kick you in the side and not the point, I guess." IUPA says, "You will never stop making pinches. If you haven't got an out and have to make a pinch, you go on ahead. I paid for these pigeons." Bergbreiter then jumps in there. "He'll give you some good ones," meaning some good pigeons, some good bust. IUPA looks back at Shaw. He says, "Well, you follow me?" By pigeons, he also might have meant that he would hand them somebody. If they wanted an arrest, he'd just hand them somebody who would go ahead and take the bust. Shaw says, "Well, what area are you in?" Iupa replies, "Well, when you find out about me, you will see I'm a pretty nice guy. All I'm interested in is gambling and the night spots in Cicero. I'm not interested in the residential areas. You could go anywhere outside the business district and you'll find nothing but a nice area." Burkbrider says, "Shaw, I'll give you a little advice. Being a boss like I was out there." Shaw says, "You mean in vice and gambling?" Burkbrider was a, you know, it was a lieutenant of vice for a long time. Burkbrider says, "Yeah, that's right. Do this on your own. This is between the three of us. Don't trust your partner, nobody." Shaw says, "Well, say the Chicago Police Intelligence Unit had a game under surveillance for a while and then gave it to us, and suddenly it wasn't there anymore. They would get wise. They'd get wise real quick. They'd know somebody blew the whistle." Iupa says, "Fine. The tables would be there. The game would be there, but the money wouldn't be on the table. Do you follow me? I'll never embarrass you. I'll never hurt you. And I can be nice to you. I can help. If you have any problem, I can be real nice to you. I can decorate the mahogany a little bit. You know what I mean? See what I mean? I can help with the payments on the new car. I can see to it that you are taken care of every month. I can see that every month there's a little bit of extra worldly goods in this life for you. Just like myself. If you walked into a place and saw me in there and your superior said, 'Pinch me,' I never even met you. Go ahead and pinch me. I go along with the show." Shaw says, "I kick you with the side of my shoe." Iupa says, "Now you're catching on. Are you with me now?" Shaw says, "I guess." Iupa said, "You know, I'm not involved in any prostitution and any narcotics. I don't take any dirty money. It's only gambling. It's okay if you want to arrest any prostitutes, any narcotics people, any of those scumbags like that. Go ahead, but that's not me anyhow." Actually, he wasn't being real candid. If they started making a bunch of prostitution arrests that was connected to Iupa, he probably would have tried to get him to quit, because he did make money off of prostitution in Cicero. Iupa says, "You understand, if I make money, you make money. You have a chance to make a little money right now. Do you think that the guy with a $4,000 or $5,000 job driving a new car with $100 suits, do you think this is all done with his salary, do you? Gambling's going to be here longer than we are." Shaw replies, "I could go in this town tonight and round up 100 gamblers. Burkbrider says, "Yeah, see, it's everywhere. Everybody's doing it." Iupa says, "You know why you are a successful man? Why the Marines, our country, is successful? Because we're gamblers. Every time there's trouble over there, we go. We're gamblers. We're gamblers. We're Americans." That's a good one. We're Americans. So Iupa says, "You know, hey, here's a phone number. If there's any gambling raids, give me a call. And I want you to know that I can get the transcript of any grand jury testimony that you give about my friend Carr. So I just want you to find a loophole for the lawyer to step through. That money might have been gambling evidence that he handed over to you, or maybe it was for the bribe. He didn't really say he was trying to bribe you. You understand? Capiche?" Shaw, with that, says, "Nice meeting you, Joey." Iupa says, "The pleasure's all mine." Of course, the rest is history. They busted Iupa, and of course, he got out of it. Burkbrider ends up leaving the sheriff's office, went into business. He was already in business as a real estate person. He ended up being a licensed private detective. So that's the anatomy of a bribery attempt by Joey Iupa. This has been a really interesting story. Like I said, I never was involved in any of this or even worked on any cases like this. I worked on some policemen, caught them dirty. We videotaped a few of them stealing from a little crew of them stealing from boxcars, but never anything like this at all. We picked up on a little information about some guys that, at least one guy that would try to tip off some of the mob bars if we had a long strip. 12th Street strip. It's a block long of primarily mob operations. There were strip clubs and had dancers, that kind of thing. This is back in the 70s. We had a guy, when ATF would go from bar to bar, they'd start at one end and work down to the other, and they can pour out liquor and see if the liquor on the label is the same as the liquor that's inside the bottle, because what these guys were doing, they would buy real cheap booze and then refill the top shelf booze. And they'd look for booze that had been bought at a retail outlet, because you couldn't buy You couldn't stock a bar, a retail outlet from a retail outlet. And sometimes these guys would get behind on their liquor bills. And so they would go to the liquor store, some friendly liquor store, and buy up a bunch of bottles at a discount and use them. And they were just looking for any violations. Any ATF was looking for any liquor law violations just to mess with people and have a chance to look around in their paperwork and see who was working there and that kind of thing. More of an intelligence gathering operation. We had a downtown footbeat officer that they had an ATF agent that was sitting inside of one of the bars about three or four bars down the row from where they started. And this guy figured out, and he was going bar to bar saying, hey, ATF agents are coming, ATF agents are coming. I don't know whatever happened to him. I noticed he did go ahead and retire. They probably called him in and kicked his butt a little bit and gave him some time off. And because it wasn't like an institutional thing, and he was – He had lost his way. Somehow he thought that he was part of this little neighborhood, an instrumental part of this little neighborhood, and that was part of his duties was to protect his people in this little neighborhood. So if you have a friend or relative has a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. A little begging now to support the podcast. If you have a Venmo app, that's V as in Victor, E-N-M-O. It's a real easy way to transfer a buck or two to somebody. I think I've said before, my son and his daughters use it. If he wants to give them $5 or $10, well, he can just transfer it to them, and then they can, I don't know how they use it. I haven't figured it all out. I know how I use it. It goes into my bank account. So if you want to buy me a cup of coffee or a shot and a beer or something like that, like several other people have, Mark Ryan particularly, I really appreciate what you've done, Mark, and a couple other guys whose names I can't remember now, hit me up on that. Or go to my website. You can make a donation. You make a $25 donation. I'll send you a copy of my movie, or just buy my movie, or just you can rent it for $1.99. I get a little piece of that. From Amazon, there's links on my website, Kansas City Mob Tour app at the Apple Store, the iTunes Store. I get a little piece of action off of that. You know, it costs money to keep this website going and the Blueberry Podcasting Hosting Company. And I don't really try to get anything for my time. I would like to get my out-of-pocket paid back. And so far, I pretty much have got my out-of-pocket paid back. You can't beat that. And it turns out it's a fun hobby. I'll never make money at it, but it is fun. I do like telling these mob stories, and I know there's a lot of people like hearing them. So good evening, folks.
Music provided by our good friend and super fan from Portland, Oregon, Casey McBride. Thanks, Casey.